This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
This is On Driven, Joy 94.9's multicultural show with Budi and Hugh. On Driven represents peace and understanding in our multicultural GLBTIQ community. If you have any comments on the program or would like to ask any questions, you can contact us in the following ways. Facebook, On Driven on Joy 949, SMS 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au.
On today's show, we are going to be talking to Muhammad from Queer Muslims Australia, a collective of gay and lesbian Muslims from around the country. The group attracts wide attention due to what many see as the contrary nature of strict Islamic observance and its contrast with homosexuality. But what is it like for them, and how do they cope with fitting into the gay community as well as their religious community? Stay here, tune into Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 to hear the answer.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Budi and Hugh. And our guest today is Mo from Queer Muslims Australia. Welcome to the show, Mo.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Now, before we start with the show, I'm very interested to know what the music was.
Yeah, well, it was actually a track I was listening to on YouTube last week to another video, and I sort of caught my ear, and I looked it up, and it's actually called, I believe, Tema Cum by Rodrigo y Gabriela. Okay. Which is and since then I've sort of downloaded a couple of his albums, and they're very catchy. They're very quite, you know, obviously got very similar beat to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very flamenco.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Good music. Good music.
Thank you.
Now, and as I said, it's Budi and Hugh, and Budi is new to On Driven.
Hello, listeners.
Budi's actually joined us as a presenter, so welcome to On Driven, Budi.
Well, how can I say no to you, Hugh, when you're
That's
just
true.
Looking at me and thinking, oh, okay, I'll do it.
You're such a smooth talker. Anyway, we're going to be talking about queer Muslims today with Mo. Now, Mo, before I go on, Mo is short for...
For Muhammad, yeah. But certainly feel free to call me either. I mean, you know,
Muhammad or Mo.
My friends call me Mo, but you know, Muhammad is my birth name, and so what I generally use.
Yeah. It's a good Muslim name as well, isn't it?
It is. Well, it's actually, I mean, the most, a lot of people know this fact, but it is the most popular name in the world, purely not because of population, but because a lot of Muslims, especially in the subcontinent, will by default call their first their children Muhammad, their first name Muhammad, and then give them a second name that may then be used in day-to-day life. That's a different name. So,
oh, okay, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
That's right. So a lot of people hear that, they think, you know, Muslims are taking over the world, but it's actually more just, you know, it's a very honourable and noble thing for people like to name their children after the
prophet. So do you have another name?
I don't know. No, that's I got called Muhammad proper.
Okay, so that's your proper name. Now let's talk about Queer Muslims Australia. How did the group start?
Well, interestingly, it started off quite small, as you would expect. A lovely woman named Alina Muhammad Ali, who basically is a lesbian and Muslim, and at the time felt it was 2004, and she felt quite isolated at the time and recognized that there's definitely going to be other queer Muslims out there. So she started what essentially was and still is a Yahoo group by the name Queer Muslims. And essentially one by one people started joining up. And since then we've slowly but steadily built ourselves up. And the great thing about it is we initially started off just as an internet-based web forum where people could post comments and discussion and talk about their experience of being both queer and Muslim in Australia. Then it's developed into something a little bit more where people are sort of seeking to meet physically and build their identity. But essentially, that's what it was, a very, very simple space. And that's the other thing about that. That's what what's so great about the internet as well, is it is a space that anyone can join and people can find each other and connect.
Mm. I'm interested to know how easy it is for a Muslim to actually come out and say, I'm gay.
It's a good question. And I think that really does depend on the individual. For certain people, I think that you know, maybe second or third generation in Australia, it's becoming easier. I know a lot of people that are, you know, a lot of young Muslims that are doing that, and it isn't as hard as everyone thinks. But certainly for people that are first generation or still connected to their families overseas, where homosexuality is still still a taboo issue and still viewed quite negatively in religious communities, and it is quite difficult. Yeah, but I feel it is changing. It certainly is changing.
So Queer Muslim Australia is primarily based online. Is that correct?
That's right.
That's
correct.
So what sort of other things that you do, or are you just mainly an online forum, or do you actually meet on outside online and on the physical world and have the discussions amongst your members?
Well, we are certainly, I think as the group grew, we have made attempts for people to come together. And so the last couple of years we've held a yearly iftar dinner, and for people that don't know, iftar is basically a Ramadan, a breaking of the fast in Ramadan, and members have come together. We have, so our main two blocks of members, obviously, as you'd imagine, are in Sydney and Melbourne. So I've been active sort of setting up different meet and greets in Melbourne, and we have met up a number of times. We sort of meet up maybe at Melbourne Central for coffee or things like that, and really it's just to take those discussions offline. I know in Sydney also, I think they've had a couple of meetings up there as well. Sadly, none of the other states have been active in that. But yeah, essentially what we're having very informal gatherings. I guess the intention and the plan is really for people then to have more formalized meetings, and really to have even a conference would be great one year, you know, in the near future. But essentially, yeah, at the moment we are just focusing on having informal chats, and it's incredible, you know, when people like that come face to face. I mean, online is great as well, but when you come face to face and you realize that somebody else, you know, that from your mosque is queer and things like that, then I think people do start to feel a little bit more comfortable.
One thing that surprised me, you said that the founding member was a woman. Now, Muslim women usually sit in the background, and it's the men who do everything and do all the talking. And so I'm really surprised that a Muslim woman actually came out and started this.
Well, that's actually the funny thing. She's also, I mean, our default leader, I guess you would say. She's not. She wouldn't admit that, but or she would certainly try and turn that down. But and just by her sheer hard work, I think we all have a lot of respect for her. And it's also quite hard to find Muslim female leaders. So yeah. She's. Certainly not a sack of potatoes. She's quite a you know, go-getter, and she's done incredible work and a lot of service to the community, so she deserves to certainly have that leadership position.
Excellent. We'll come back to more story about Queer Muslims Australia very soon. Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Budi and Hugh. Now, Mo, we were talking about Queer Muslims Australia, and the founding member is actually a lady. Now, this interested me because, being Muslim, ladies usually don't get a say in much of things and take a back seat to men. How many ladies would you say are in Queer Muslims Australia?
Well, I don't have any official data with me, but generally just having a quick look at our membership list, it seems to be probably about 40%, maybe 40-45% female. So
and that's quite high.
It is quite high, and also, you know, unsurprisingly, they're also quite active in the group as well, which is fantastic to see, because the other stereotype is that Muslim women don't have a voice, but certainly not in this case, and especially I think for lesbian Muslims, all those issues that people do stereotype about, you know, patriarchy and all those other perceptions of the Muslim community, is something that they would feel quite strongly about, and but also their experiences, I guess, are similar to anyone, and that's, you know, finding love and being a woman, and Muslim woman is obviously a challenge in itself.
Now, I know it's Queer Muslims Australia. Do you ever get requests from overseas?
We do all the time. Yes, yeah. It's which is interesting, because there are, you know, similar resources all around the world. Obviously, as you'd imagine, in America, there's in Canada, there's a queer Muslim group called Al Fatiha, you know, they're quite active, quite strong as well. Also in Britain, but some people do try and join us. Usually, people also from our local geographical region, so Muslims from Indonesia, which is great to see, because they are our closest neighbour.
Do you accept people from overseas?
We generally do have a rule that we don't accept people that don't reside in Australia. We also don't accept people that aren't from the Islamic faith, and the reason for that is to keep the space you know, safe and open, and also that the understanding of the group. We did have a few Muslims that weren't a few members that weren't from the faith, and they obviously are starting a little bit more behind where the discussion is, and that can obviously cause things to, you know, have to repeat a lot of the issues.
So you mentioned other Islamic groups or queer Islamic groups from different parts of the world. So do you have a regular contact with them? Do you share some resources and you know, about dealing with the challenges that you're facing in your own group?
We don't, and that is certainly something I think we really should be doing. It's something that we can be doing, because this is a community that, you know, the queer Muslim community, obviously, it's been around for thousands of years. Queer Muslims have been around for thousands of years. But really, this is something that's just exploded in the last 10 to 15 years with all these groups popping up. And I think, and again, this is by virtue of the internet, which is such a blessing for our times. So, we do have I've had informal conversations with people overseas, but whether or not we actually have something that is more official, more formal, you know, an international gathering or something like that, I think is really important. One great thing that maybe you may have seen it or not, that played at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival a couple of years ago, was a film called A Jihad for Love, and that was basically a film that went all around the world and explored different stories of queer Muslims, you know, from Turkey to Iran to Canada, to Europe, and that was fascinating to hear that the experiences were so different but also very similar, and maybe it is time that we do start looking at working together.
Just one question, I just need to understand, and I'm sure the listener would want to understand, what reason would you reject somebody who is overseas?
It's just a sort of a policy that's been there from the start. But the main reason is localized based discussion. So there are international web forums as well that aren't based on any geographical location. But we generally do try and keep it so that the discussion is limited. We obviously limit the discussion that way, so it isn't as much as we would hope, but also that when the discussion does happen, then it's not people talking about any, you know, topic here, there and everywhere, but rather that people can talk about it from an Australian context, and also that people can, you know, connect with each other more.
What topics do you have that popular?
It's there are a few that do keep coming up time to time. Certainly I mean, people do post a lot of news articles that are related to being queer and Muslim. Actually, something an article that just someone posted the other day, which was quite fascinating, was the Pew Institute, I believe, which is an international polling organization based out of America, did a survey in the UK of Muslim people there and their attitudes towards homosexuality. Mm. And it was actually found to be quite positive.
Really?
The majority of British-born Muslims actually had when asked about their attitude, were quite favourable to it. So that was something that was quite interesting, because obviously we sort of live in a bubble thinking that it's quite negative. So a lot of news articles get posted, but also, you know, then you see horrendous things that come from overseas and the treatment of gay Muslims, you know, in places like Iran. So there is a lot of discussion there about those things. We do talk about... you know, people do talk about the challenges of coming out to their family and really wanting to do that, but not really sure about how to do it or the avenues and that's great, because other people in the group that have come out to their families and can provide advice, and sometimes the advice is don't do it, you know, don't do it yet or wait. And then, of course, you know, the good old people, a lot of discussion about love, of course, and people, you know, nothing more complicated when two Muslims fall in love with each other.
Yeah, it's interesting that you just mentioned, you know, other countries, and you mentioned Iran, because on Driven we've been promoting Railroad for Queer Iranian Refugees with Arshan Parsi, who is based in Toronto. And he's been on the show twice and spoke about the treatment they have in their country, how they get lashed and executed sometimes and have to escape to Turkey or some other country. And his organization actually helps these people. If somebody from Iran came to your organization, you know, and wanted to join in the conversation or find out information, is there anyone that would sort of pass information on to them?
Well, it does come down to, I guess, what our level of experience is with that issue. Certainly, our door is always open to help anyone that is being persecuted overseas or anyone that is seeking help. And I know we do have a couple of lawyers in our group and people like that. So we would certainly certainly the door would be mostly be incredibly open for those people.
You wouldn't close the door on them.
Absolutely not. No. Of course not. When we were talking about that, it's more about you know, people that are just curious from overseas. But certainly people in need are always welcome.
Okay. We'll come back to this story very soon.
And you are listening to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. And that was a song. Now, Mo, would you like to explain to the listeners, because that is such a very catchy song, so I can't help but stop myself from wiggling my chairs. What is that song and who is it by?
It is a very catchy song. It's a song by a woman called Nancy Ajram, who's an Egyptian singer, and she's probably as big as Madonna and Beyonce in the Middle East. Very, very popular. And the song was called Ultaniyeh, which means that what did you say to me?
You say she's a Madonna of the Middle East.
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
It's very popular.
Madonna, yeah. Lady Gaga and Beyonce.
All rolled into one.
Excellent.
Yep.
Now, we're talking to Mo from Gay Muslims Australia. If you have any questions or would like to make any comments, you can SMS 0427JOY949. We do have Jess and Heath on the front desk, so you can call 1-300-JOY-949. That's 1-300-569-949. If you have anything that you would like to say, and it's an interesting subject, so we would like to hear from you and hear your opinion even. Now, Mo, we were talking about women and the founding member as a lady and everything else. Let's move on to a question that has been put to us. How easy is it to be a practicing Muslim and gay?
It's, again, that varies from individual to individual. I mean, some people have made absolute complete peace with it, and some people have become atheists because of it. And that's what I find fascinating about our group, is that there is such a diversity of people there. There are people that once they, you know, recognize their same-sex attraction, they leave the faith, and there are those that are, you know, we have members of our group that are still quite conservative. They're very strict about it. You know, they're five times prayers and they're Ramadan, and many of them even still will argue with members that about whether or not, you know, the permissibility of it in the faith. So, but and that is the thing about faith, I guess. It is a powerful thing, whether people agree with it or not, but it is still quite undeniably quite powerful. And you do, like I say, find quite a lot of our members quite, you know, happily and living both of those lives.
Because I knew someone not too long ago who was a practicing Muslim and prayed five times a day and did everything right. But as far as homosexuality went, it was taboo. It was completely non-existent. It didn't exist. And in his country, it didn't exist. And no Muslim would be gay. So is there, do you find that with the straight Muslim community? Do you find that sort of attitude coming across?
Look, I mean, again, I think people also need to be careful of trying to throw, you know, 1.6 billion Muslims into one basket. Yeah, look, certainly in you know, in a village in Saudi Arabia, people may have views that aren't, you know, so so proper. But again, I think if we look at, for, you know, the community, the Muslim community in Australia, for example, many Muslims that I speak to are quite not only accept that it's there, but also recognise it as you know, a legitimate sort of form of sexual expression. So people are going to have different views, and again, it varies from first generation to, you know, second and third generation. And yeah, you know, I guess it's to put it perfectly, it's very similar to, I guess, views that you would find in non-Muslim communities. If you go speak to a Christian in Nigeria or Angola, they're going to be telling you one thing about homosexuality. If you speak to a Christian or an atheist, even in London, you'll get a variety of views. If you speak to a person in San Francisco, you're going to get a variety of views. And that is certainly the same thing with the Muslim community. But again, you know, one of the things that our group, the motto of our group, is that with education comes liberation. The reason that people may have views about the reason certain Muslims might have views about homosexuality is because they're not exposed to the experiences, the lived experiences of queer Muslims. They don't see them every day because there aren't opportunities for them to share their experiences or to share their stories. So, if you know, when you get people like, you know, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, who, you know, famously said there are no gays in Iran, he yeah. literally probably does believe that because he does not get to experience those people. People, gay people don't walk around with a rainbow neon light, you know, coming
especially
from their head.
In Iran. Yeah.
Exactly. But we don't know who's gay and we don't know who's straight when we walk down the street. But it's more about those experiences, those very real experiences, those very lived experiences being told to other Muslims. And I think, like I said, the most, when I speak to other Muslims about the work I do with queer Muslims, I think people are quite sympathetic and they recognize that it is a reality.
Right.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because you do you did mention about the situation in Iran, and I would like to ask your opinion about the difference with Islamic as a faith, as a religion, and the politics of many Islamic countries. You know, in from your understanding, what is how does homosexuality being viewed in Islam in general?
And that's it's funny because religions are so open, I guess, to the political situation of the time, and also what is the interpretations we've seen with religions have evolved from you know, over time things, certainly there is you know, based on, you see it in most countries today, there is a political, especially countries that are high levels of conservative people, there are, you know, a lot of animosity towards same-sex attraction, homosexuality and things like that, and complete misconceptions. But it does differ from country to country. I mean, you do get Muslim countries where it is, for example, a lot more open, a lot more acceptable. You get a lot of countries, you know, places like Indonesia and Turkey and Egypt, for example, where people know that, oh, that guy is gay, that guy, you know, she's a lesbian, and they're fine with it. People don't go around. And then you do get countries where the politicians and these hardline governments completely jump on the opportunity to use it to make themselves look more credible. And that's a real shame, unfortunately. Those are obviously the sorts of governments that we see crumbling all around us at the moment. So
there is a dress code for Muslim women, and I mean, I know that it varies from country to country, but generally they cover up most of their body, if I'm correct in saying that.
Yeah, I mean, well, again, it varies from country to country and people to people, practice to practice. But yeah, the majority of devout Muslim women would wear a headscarf, which means that they are only exposing their face and their hands. Yeah.
From your experience, the lesbians, you know, who are Muslim, do they still follow the traditional dress, or are they more westernized?
Based on the fact that we're a queer Muslim group in Australia, the majority are westernized. But that's not because of any religiosity. I think that's probably more to do with the fact that we live in Australia.
I just want to share quickly with you, Mo, because I'm from Indonesia, and we do have queer lesbian women, or you know, whatever you want to call it, and they do wear the hijab, and they do wear they do practice that religion. So it's very interesting what you mentioned about the queer Australians group being westernized. Just want to know, do you think that people feel that they have to choose between staying in their own ethnic community, wherever they came from, and their religion community, with the Western, what being perceived as more liberal culture?
Within the gay community, or more broadly?
More broadly, look,
it's one of those things, and I think more broadly in Australia we are having these discussions about multiculturalism, assimilation, and all that jazz, and I think it's one of those things that really depends on what resources that people have when they come to Australia. So people that are able to speak the language, that are able to integrate into the workforce, obviously more generally do tend to go to more liberal sort of way, and then people that don't have those resources generally do tend to stick together and have more observance. I think one thing is, within the Muslim community, Muslims are generally a lot more devout than many other religious communities, and I know that's a massive generalization.
More developed.
More devout in their faith.
I misunderstood what you said.
And so people then generally do a lot of Muslims do hold their faith in high regard. So even when they do come to Australia, they will engage with the wider community in many ways. But religion, certainly at home or at the mosque, is still something that a lot of Muslims do try and preserve.
What does the Quran say about homosexuality? Does it mention it?
It does absolutely. And unlike the Bible, which has a very direct quote about, you know, man should not, or the Old Testament says, you know, man should not lie with another man, the Quran is more broadly speaks about the story of Lot, and obviously, you know, that which is universal and what's quite famous. But again, Muslim scholars have looked at that story and been able to deduct variety of things, whether or not the punishment was because they slept with men, or because the way that they engaged with a lot of hostility towards, they're accused of raping young boys and things like that. So that was whether it was that sort of conduct, or whether it was their homosexuality more broadly.
Okay, hold that story. We'll come back to it. Joy 94.9. This is Orange Ribbon with Budi and Hugh, and our guest today is Mo from Queer Muslims Australia. And he's picked the music today, and I have to say, the music's been very good, Mo.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I knew I was coming to Joyous, so I knew the standard would have to be quite
good.
Quite high, yes. Yeah.
Now, tell us, what's the last song you just played then?
The last song was called Love and Rewind, and it's by Dino Merlin, and he was the Bosnian entry into Eurovision last year, so it was quite a good song. He didn't win, unfortunately, but it was certainly my favourite song.
Are you a fan of Eurovision?
I'm starting to be. I think after I watched last year for the first time, and I didn't mind it. I thought it was quite good. So I think I'll be tuning in.
Oh, you're new to Eurovision.
I'm quite new to it, yeah. So I'll probably be tuning in again this year.
I think it's wonderful. I mean, it's even funnier these days now that the Eastern Bloc is in there as well. And it's all very political. And
right. Well, Turkey's in there, which is, you know, which again is also quite controversial.
It was a controversy, yeah.
Anyway, it was a good song. Thank you. Now, let's get back to the story, Queer Muslims. Islamophobia in the GLBTIT community. Explain that.
Well, it's interesting. Islamophobia is obviously something that's, since 9/11, has become quite an issue. Obviously, people are, given the backdrop of terrorism and things like that, people are quite you know, concern about, I think, things like Islam and, well, it started off with terrorism, but now more broadly people are concerned with Islam. But I think with the community, I think, like, we always talk to, you know, queer Muslims about their experiences in the wider GLBTQI community, and generally it's actually quite positive. Because, I mean, a lot of people in the community are obviously, well, not a lot, but there is a large proportion of people that do lead towards atheist sort of views, but or anti-religion, anti-religious views, and that's fair enough, I think, given the experience that most gay and lesbian people have had with religious communities, and certainly given the fact that there's definitely a lot of homophobia in the Islamic community, but I'm, you know, one thing I'm quite proud of and quite happy to see is certainly talking to people in the group, the experience is not the reverse, which is good. So generally, a lot of talking to members in the group about their experiences, you know, being coming out, I guess, quote unquote, as Muslim in the gay and lesbian community is actually something that people have been quite accepted, and that's a fascinating. And I think obviously shows the maturity within the gay and lesbian community. Now, not to say that everyone. Was obviously not, you know, I think gay and lesbian people are quite right in having a lot of concerns about Islam and a lot of concerns about Muslims, but I think there is definitely a lot of sympathy, well, not sympathy, but I think there's certainly a lot of acceptance, I think, of people that choose to be queer and Muslim.
Was there much backlash against Muslims in Australia when they were blowing up the towers and everything else? I mean,
yeah, absolutely, and it still, you know, it still continues till today. But yeah, absolutely, that was I think a time when all Muslims, whether they were queer or not, were sort of under fire from a lot of different avenues and different corners. And yeah, I think it was certainly it was quite an unfortunate time. But thankfully, you know, we hope to be moving further and further away from that.
Well, people should accept Muslims, not judge them by what, well, two or three people did.
That's right. I mean, it's not about, you know, necessarily accepting Muslims, but it's certainly about not judging or throwing every single Muslim in one bucket. I mean, that's the funny thing, is if you went out to the wider community and said, you know, there are actually some Muslims that are gay and lesbian, you know, people wouldn't have picked that up. They think we're all, you know, fundamental nutcases wanting to blow up the train station.
And nobody who's Muslim can be gay.
That's certainly the perception. Yeah.
Well, you're touching it there, Hugh, and you mentioned it also before as well about homophobia in the Islamic communities, especially here in Australia. I just want to know, is there a strong Islamic leaders or community leaders that actually support the gay and lesbian GLBTI cause and who actually challenge homophobia within their own communities?
It's an interesting question, and I think that at the moment the political will isn't there yet. My sense is speaking to a lot, and I speak to a lot of Islamic leaders about this issue, and generally a lot of them, you know, sort of say, you know, okay, whether or not it's permissible or not permissible, that's another issue. Let's keep that on the side, but let's focus on the fact. The fact is that there are gay. There are people of the Muslim faith that are gay and lesbian, and that is a lived reality. And the Muslim community, it's important that the Muslim community doesn't sideline these people, excommunicate them, doesn't throw them out, doesn't look down on them, doesn't act aggressively or violently towards them, because they are still, at the end of the day, part of the community, but also, you know, they're in a very fragile space sometimes. And I think there is some leadership is good, and certainly I think that goes back to Australia. The more integrated they are, the more closely aligned they are with Australia, they generally are quite good. So I have heard certain scholars sort of saying those things about having an open space, having an open community. But yeah, you do get look at, you know, a funny story. I know an imam, who's a religious leader that once gave a sermon preaching against homosexuals quite violently, and he was actually arrested by ASIO, which is the security intelligence force for inciting hatred. It turned out he was actually gay himself. It emerged many years later that he was found at one of the gay.
So there's the case of internalized homophobia. That's and reconciling, I think, in the process of reconciling faith and sexuality.
That's right. And I think as Muslim leaders become more secure in their faith and in their own, well, and their own sexuality, obviously, I think they will then be opening the doors for that. But it is also a very quiet, silent world as well. Yeah.
One discussion we had off air was people joining your group and setting up fake marriages. Now, how rampant is that in the Muslim community?
Yeah, it was. I thought it was something quite interesting. It's not epidemic, but it is something that does pop up from time to time. And when it does pop up, I think we look at it and we say, this is still, we've still got a long way to go, that people are still that having to do this, or feel that they have to do this. Mm. And that is, of course, like for the listeners, is essentially when a gay man looks for a lesbian woman to then be in a fake marriage. That, so that can
the
appease.
The lavender marriage.
Sorry?
The lavender marriage. That,
yes, exactly. So to keep up appearances, basically, and to keep their families happy. It doesn't happen a lot, but when it does happen, I think it's still quite shocking to see that. So I think, you know, probably last year it may have happened twice or three times. But every time it was, I think the membership of the group was kind of like, you know, you really don't this is really your very, very last option, you know, and there you may be having views about your family. And, of course, people know their own situation better than anyone else, but still they may be jumping to conclusions about their families without exploring if there are any other avenues as well.
But it obviously works both ways. It's not just men joining to meet a lesbian. You'll get lesbians joining to meet a man.
Look, most of the time it is actually the women doing it. Yeah,
is it really?
Majority of the time it is. And again, obviously, I think the pressures there are, again, in very cultural and new and emerging communities. I think that the pressure there on the females is much stronger. And unfortunately,
really?
This is, well, you know, the pressure that they will get married and start a family and have kids and all that stuff. And again, like I said, this is an ongoing issue. I think it's something that will be resolved as, you know, generations pass.
Mm.
But this is, unfortunately, the reality that we deal with now. And it's not too dissimilar, I think, to what Australia was like maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago, where people were doing that anyway, and we see it all still quite widely across the world, unfortunately. But it is something that I hope is changing.
In Muslim families in Australia, do they still have arranged marriages?
They don't. This is actually one of the big misconceptions about Muslims. It does happen, you know, you do
overseas.
Find... You know, it does happen, but also does... I mean, it does happen here, but it is very... The funny thing, the religion actually bans arranged marriages. A woman...
Oh, right.
For a female... For a marriage to be Islamically valid, a female actually has to give consent to the marriage. But unfortunately, you do have certain cultures, unfortunately, and not to name names, but the subcontinent is probably the biggest culprit on this, that just these things have been entrenched in their culture for thousands of years. All of a sudden, you know, the 20th and 21st century pops up and we're all of a sudden all modernized, you know, thanks to the great work of feminism and many other, you know, activists. But these things are still... there's still a time to go, but it isn't a Muslim thing per se.
Okay. We'll come back to more story very soon. Joy 949, this is Orange Ribbon with Budi and Hugh, and our guest today is Mo from Queer Muslims Australia. Now, we've spoke about a lot of different subjects here today, but there's one thing we haven't done. We haven't told people who are Muslim and gay and want to join your organization how they can do it.
Certainly, absolutely. And if there is anyone out there that is thinking about this issue or may know people that are dealing with it, it's very simple. It's basically just a Yahoo group. The address is groups.yahoo.com. Did not mean that, sorry, .com. I got put over there. Yahoo.com /groups/ queer Muslims. That is certainly the reason why live radio should never happen.
Let me try that. So that's groups.yahoo.com/groups/queer Muslims.
Okay.
Quite embarrassing there, sorry.
I must tell the listener that Mo's face went very red.
Yes, yeah, that was... something got caught in my throat there. It was very bad timing.
Now, how easy is it just to join up? Do you have to prove anything to you or what?
Yeah, look, we do have a bit of a process. Not a bit of a process, but more just to avoid, I guess, the wrong people from joining. That's within the Muslim community as well. We do sort of just ask a couple of questions to verify people's identity, but it is an easy process, yeah.
Okay. And how many members do you have then?
We've just crossed... We're sort of about 115 at the moment. So,
okay.
Yeah, so it's a small group, but it's growing. Yeah, every week we're sort of getting two or three members, which is good.
And you did say that 40% are female.
That's right, yeah. Yep.
Okay.
And about 60% male, yeah.
Right. And the founder, which I keep saying this, but I find it incredible that the founder was a female.
Well, yeah. And I believe she's been on this station. She's actually just had a child with her partner. So she's been quite busy. But, be great to... She's got her own story, which is quite fascinating as well.
One question. Sorry, buddy. One question. Do the Muslim community that you know... Do they actually mix with people from different religions, or do they stay within their
own religion? No, absolutely. Of course they do. And that's, again, another stereotype that gets thrown out there all the time. If anything, most Muslims live very healthy lives, interacting with others.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Well, unfortunately, we have come to the end of the show.
We do have come to the end of the show. Now, before we go, I'm just going to quickly say Happy Chinese New Year. Gong xi fa qiao.
Happy Chinese New Year, yeah. That is On Driven for another week. Our thanks to Mo, or Mohammed, as his real name is, for taking time out to have a chat with us. Thanks for joining us on Driven today. On Driven will be back again at the same time, 4 o'clock next Saturday afternoon, with our special 500th show. We will be playing segments from the past shows as far back as 2008 and have a live performance by one of our past guests. I think this is a first. Join us next week for a two-hour show and celebrate 500 Orange Ribbon shows. From Budi and myself, Hugh, bye for now and have a great week.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.